after today. So I'll mention, as I will until we get into November, that in Tucson it's a really hot city. And so it's not the hottest in the United States, but we adopt a lighter, a little bit more casual dress code. It's certainly a lot cooler. And although it's not really steamy, sticky hot like it was earlier this summer, it's just nice. It's not hot. I could just wear a tie and suit, but I chose to wait until the end of the month to do that. So deal with it. In the late fall of 1974, I was in my senior year at Ambassador College, and at the Feast of Tabernacles that year, I was in one of our larger feast sites back in those days, Mount Pocono, Pennsylvania. Probably none of you here ever attended in Mount Pocono, did you? Anyone? No, you didn't. Okay, there was only 14,000 people there at that site in this huge barn-like building, metal building that the church owned on its property there in Mount Pocono, Pennsylvania, and a lot of people. And even though there are that many people, they didn't have heaters in some of those church-owned halls, and it would get kind of chilly in the fall. I mean, you're up in the mountains of Pennsylvania, and even though there's 14,000 people in the building, a little bit nippy. During those years, they asked at the various feast sites that we had, they would ask the Ambassador College students to sit up near the front in a specified area so that if any prospective student, like a high school junior or a high school senior, wanted to come up and ask about any questions about Ambassador College, then there we would be there, a little entourage at every site, you know, probably 14 or 15 sites, about half of them owned by the church. And at most of the sites, there'd be a contingent of Ambassador College students there. And also, a lot of members would come up and just want to meet Ambassador College students. I mean, it doesn't sound like a whole lot now, but believe me, back in the day, it was kind of a thing, and it was nice to be recognized and nice to be a representative of the college. I mean, from my standpoint, it was always kind of nice. There was a topic in those years that was introduced to the church that was, I think it was just around the time that I was coming into the church, kind of a topic, kind of a focus scripture that came to our understanding at the time. It was explained time and time again, but I don't think many people had really thought that much about it until it came about. But it was just something that was, you know, intriguing, I think, for everyone. After that service in which this particular topic was discussed, I was just milling around the stage, waiting for people to tumble onto my brilliance and my spirituality as an Ambassador College senior. And eventually, one lady did come up, and she was a university... I'm joking, okay, about that, all right, just for those of you online. She came up, and she recognized that I was an Ambassador College student, I guess, and she engaged me in a conversation. She, I think, was kind of new in the faith. I don't even know if she's a member yet. But I remember she was a university professor, and I remember that she was from Ohio, and I think that she taught science. And for somebody, you know, that educated to ask me a question just because I was Ambassador College student. Well, you know, Ambassador College, we knew everything, of course. We were taught everything. We had Bible classes all day long, so we did obviously know quite a bit. But in those years, by the way, for those of you who don't get the joke, people would say that 1 year of Ambassador College was equal to being like 4 years in the church in terms of learning. So I don't know who came up with that, but I'm going to go with that. So anyway, so even though I'd only been baptized for a couple of years, it was like I was 8 years in the faith at that time. But this lady asked a very interesting question after this topic was presented during the sermon that day, and she wanted a little clarification on it, and I answered the best that I could. I'm going to be speaking on that topic today, and I think I gave her the right answer for what I knew at that particular time. But it was a really good question that she had. And I could tell that my answer didn't totally resonate with her, and she walked away bewildered. That seems to be kind of the hallmark of my ministry, I guess, making people just have a bewildered expression on their face. Well, she didn't get the answer that satisfied her curiosity, but through the years, like you probably, I've understood that my answer was correct, but it may not have been as complete as it could have been. So the information that we have today about this topic, there's no way that we could have understood the totality of it way back in 1974. There's just absolutely no way would it have made that sense, because the world has changed dramatically since 1974, right? The world has changed dramatically in the last couple of years, I think we all understood. But we did understand the basics of this particular scripture, and it was good enough at the time. As you have returned from the Feast of Tabernacles, and I know that most of you returned, except for those of you that were ill, returned on a high. You always do. You come back from the Feast of Tabernacles. You're engaged with the whole process of learning about the thousand-year reign of Christ. You're engaged with your friends in the church. And I know that even though we had a smaller site here, it was basically filled to capacity for our hall here right now, and it was amazing. We had a lot of nice people, and it was nice to have the facility in which we could really have extended time to visit with them and to get to know them a little bit better. And you did as well wherever you went. I know you did. You had a great time wherever you went. You're among God's people, and it kind of supercharges you to a certain extent, right? It kind of helps you to be of people with like mind for a whole week. But after you come back from the Feast of Tabernacles, there's something I want you to be aware of very specifically, something that is very, very important. And I will even say this. I think that it should be an important part of your focus as a representative of the kingdom that you just finished celebrating in anticipation of the reign of Christ. I think this is one of the most important topics that you could address in your own personal life, in my personal life, as you come back to your normal activities and, you know, returning from the Feast of Tabernacles. For you to fulfill that responsibility that I'm going to speak about today, you need to understand, obviously, the topic that was introduced over 50 years ago to the Church of God, and given in a way that was really intriguing at the time. So today we're going to examine one scripture, and that scripture is found in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2. I don't know how long I've been speaking. I just started my clock, so I'm going to have to really kind of quit about 5 minutes earlier than I think that the time is here, so my apologies for that. We're going to read the instruction that Paul gave to the Ephesians in 2 verses 2. And after today's message, my expectation is that you'll be able to explain this passage better than I did in 1974. And if somebody asks you what this means, hopefully you'll have a little bit better understanding than I did way back then. Now, I'm serious. I think that I gave the lady a good answer. I never saw her again in the church. I don't know whatever happened to her. Hopefully she remained in the church, and I didn't discourage her from ever coming back again. Hope not, anyway. But more than that, you need to be prepared for a future that we could in no way imagine or envision in 1974. And understanding this passage better than I did will help you in that quest. So let's read it. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2. I've got my Bible handy here, and I've got my other Bible that the Metzlers, the Bible case they gave me, but I need larger print. So yeah, I probably should go to 14 point, and it's in 12 point, but it just will help, and I'll give you time to catch up. Not a whole lot of scriptures in this particular message, so you won't have to flip back and forth too much. Ephesians 2 and verse 2, it says, "In which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air and the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience." And that was explained to us in the early 70s as the methodology of deception by which the god of this world actually has deceived all of mankind since the Garden of Eden. So you know of this passage already, but as we have moved through time, we now know more than we did before, at least we should. And I'm going to try to tear this particular passage apart and explain it to you as thoroughly as I know how. And I think that today afterwards you should have a better understanding of this passage. If you don't, shame on me. When I take my car to the Ford dealership just for a regular checkup, oil change, and change the tires and all that sort of thing, they run it through these diagnostics, right? You're familiar with these computers. If you have a fairly, a car that's made in the last 20 years, a lot of them have a lot of computers in them. And they use computers to diagnose what's actually going wrong with the car. So if your engine light comes on, like it did with one of our members from El Paso, Luis, then you can take it to an AutoZone, you can take it to your dealership, and they can plug it in underneath your dashboard, and they can tell you if it's something serious. In Luis's case, his engine light came on the day he was leaving, and he's kind of concerned about that, or the day before he was leaving, and then he found out there's nothing really all that serious, and he could get home, and he did make it home okay. But when we do that, the systems that they use diagnose what might be wrong by communicating with the computers in the car, right? You're familiar with that. It's a pretty simple concept. It's, a lot of people long for the day when things were a little bit less complex and they had carburetors rather than fuel injectors and all that kind of thing. But, this is where we are. I think it's kind of a neat system, although there's so many things that can go wrong with computers, as we kind of found out just before services a little bit today with some of the technology that we have. But if we didn't have it, we wouldn't be able to speak to 55 people who could not be here. But if you have that system and you have an honest mechanic, it can save time in figuring out what might be wrong. I think we all remember the days in which you take your car in to get fixed and they say, well, it's probably this, and then you fix that, and then you find out, well, the same problem is there a day or two later, and then they fix the wrong thing, charge you for the wrong thing. And then you got to go through the whole process of diagnosis, without having the computers to be able to tell you exactly what it is. Well, after the feast, it's time for all of us to perform a self-diagnosis of our own spiritual systems, our own spiritual life. I know you got a high, you were on a high, coming down off a high, so to speak, spiritually speaking, going to the Feast of Tabernacles. And on top of that, you're just out of your normal daily routine, too. And that's a good thing for all of us as human beings to do. Just get away, maybe travel, have a little bit of a vacation. There's nothing wrong with that. Change of pace, change of scenery. That's always a good thing. You're rejuvenated, as a matter of fact, but now you're back at your normal activities. Paul's instruction to the Ephesians is also a wake-up call for us. And I mean me too. Ephesians 2 and verse 2 is a passage that reveals an external threat to your spiritual operating system. It's something that can cause a lot of damage, and you need to understand how it can affect your life and how it probably has affected your life to the point to where this is where we want to avoid. You don't have to turn there. I'll read this passage to you, but 2 Timothy or 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 19. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 19. Paul noticed that there are a couple of individuals who had a problem, had a difficulty, and it was because of this influence of the God of this world. He mentions that having good faith and a good conscience, some have rejected concerning the faith, have suffered shipwreck. So I know I'm mixing the analogies. We're talking about shipwrecks, and I've been speaking about car problems, but they just didn't have cars back in Paul's day. So I've got to go to the next best thing, a ship. And a problem with whatever, the weather or whatever, shipwreck. Now, Paul was an incredible, savant in terms of knowing what shipwreck was, because it says in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 25, that he had been in three shipwrecks. I don't think any of us have been in shipwreck before, but you can just imagine in the ancient world what a traumatic event that would have been. People that were on that boat died. Paul didn't, but perhaps many of the passengers, fellow passengers on boats that he would cross around the Mediterranean, actually died. How could they not have? Cargo was lost, invaluable cargo was lost, and merchants lost maybe everything that they had shipped across the sea. So when Paul says that these individuals suffered shipwreck, spiritually speaking, that is a huge, huge deal. And we'll read about some of these individuals a little bit later. But Paul was in three separate shipwrecks, which is an amazing thing to me. Later, he used the trauma and the tragedy of the loss of life of cargo to describe the spiritual destruction of Hymenaeus and Alexander, who were colleagues, and these names remain today. They live in infamy, right? Because these individuals were kind of traitorous to the faith. They were blaspheming God. Not Paul, but God. Paul had to turn them over to the devil for that. So the problem that was the cause of Hymenaeus and Alexander's catastrophic failure as Christians is the same that could cause problems to you if you weren't careful, if you were unaware. The university professor from Ohio that came to me with a really great question, which I'll tell you in just a second, an honest question about one of the topics that was discussed that day during the Feast of Tabernacles in Mount Pocono, Pennsylvania. She had asked, even after the explanation that was given during the sermon that day, she had a question I'll get to in just a second. But it was explained that day that Satan is the prince of the power of the air, and that he broadcasts on this earth in negative attitudes and emotions. And people wonder why they may be subject to wrong thoughts and even depression or emotional anxiety. And it was explained that day that there is a powerful influence that is broadcasting negative thoughts constantly, day and night. And that we can be subject to it, and that explains a lot of the problems that take place in this world, because that has been going on since the Garden of Eden. Now, this professor was a smart lady, a lot smarter than me, I'm sure. But she asked me how this was done. Was it done by radio waves? Or was it done by microwave transmission somehow? And, you know, the question took me back because I thought, well, did you hear this? You hear what just was mentioned? That, you know, of course, obviously, since I was a senior at Ambassador College, I knew the answer to everything, so I explained it, you know, by kind of rehearsing what the speaker had said that day. But she kind of walked away befuddled because she was looking for a physical answer to something that was a spiritual component, not something you can actually taste, touch, feel, or see. You can't see radio waves either, but we understand them because we understand that they're a physical phenomenon, right? I mean, kind of, right? Just like sending something over the internet, if it's like we printed out something here just before the service and it went from the computer, it went to the printer, and it's through the air. And it's like, how's that happen? It's like magic. I mean, that's what we would have thought back in 1974. You take something that's on that computer over there and you send it in the other room and it just goes through the air. How does all these little words know how to get in the right place? So she was looking for something that I couldn't provide for because, you know, frankly, that's all I had. You know, it's attitudes, it's emotions, it can change things that way. So, and I was right, but I was a little bit incomplete, as you'll see today as we go through the rest of this message. The professor walked away kind of befuddled, and maybe I contributed to that. I hope not, but maybe she understood it later on. To better understand Paul's statement, let's break it down into three equal parts throughout the rest of the sermon today. We'll go to some other corroborating passages as well, but let's read this again. In which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience. You'll see that there are three distinct parts, and the first is the course of this world. the manner of this particular age, not just the earth, but the age in which we live, the age of man. This is what Paul is explaining. He explained to the Ephesians that their walk, or the way that they lived and the way that they conducted their lives previously, was done in ignorance because they hadn't known the truth. They were Greeks. They didn't have the scriptures available to them. They had a great library at Ephesus. In fact, the library at Ephesus was one of the top two libraries in the entire world at that time. I mean, they have books like this, but they had books and or papyrus, scrolls, and whatever. They didn't have the Bible in Ephesus, one of the great libraries in the entire world. And they had a competition between Ephesus and Alexandria, Egypt, as to who would have the best library. It's kind of an ancient competitive city-state thing. But they were renowned for their libraries, but they were ignorant as far as the truth of God was concerned. And Paul is just mentioning that. They didn't have that as a part of their culture. And they were totally oblivious to the Bible and to Israel and to everything that was there. And Paul said that their walk or the way they lived was done according to the Greek culture, the Greek model. And sometimes they had laws, but they didn't have God's laws all the time. Sometimes they had right and wrong, but they had a very libertine society in which they lived, and their lives had been affected by it, just as whatever society people grow up in, they're going to be affected by it. And they basically is telling them that you've been deceived. You've been subject to the God of this world. He's done a number on you. He's affected your conduct. But it's okay for now, because just like he told the Athenians in chapter 17 of the book of Acts, you know, God winks at this. He winks at this time of disobedience. Why? Because they didn't know any better. Just like to a certain degree, all of us. We're ignorant totally until we're called by the truth. Let's just take a very obvious example. We didn't know before, unless you grew up in the church like some of you did, that you were to keep the seventh day, Sabbath day. You thought, well, that was changed by somebody somewhere. God changed it, blah, blah. That's what you grew up with. You were ignorant in that sense. You were ignorant of the law. And in that sense, you're not held accountable for that. So Paul explained, just as he did, if you want to hold your place in Ephesians 2, turn to Ephesians 4 and verse 17. You know, he explains their ignorance in this way, comparing them with all the other people around them in society, a small church group, and maybe it got up to be several hundred or whatever, in the city of Ephesus, which was a pretty large city back in that day. I think the population was somewhere in the area of 100,000, 200,000, something like that, a pretty big city. But he said, "This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk." You're not going to operate your life like they do. "In the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened." Well, who's darkening it? The God of this world. He's prevented it. I mean, he says that in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4. You know, the God of this world has blinded mankind, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart. So in that sense, same applies to us, right? Ignorance. You know, before you came here, you were ignorant, right? You're not as accountable as later on when you make a conscious choice to accept the call to repentance and decide you're going to walk in a different direction. You're going to give up a lot of the things that you did before. And the Ephesians did as well. They had to give up a lot of the things that they were doing in the past and give up the Greek pantheon of gods and Zeus, and maybe he was a Roman god, I can't remember, but whatever his counterpart was, Jupiter and all the rest. Had to give up that, forsake that, even though everybody else around was selling trinkets that would be purchased at the temple of Artemis or Diana. Another horrible pagan god, goddess in that sense, where They had, you know, talk about understanding dark, and, you know, all the name of religion, temple prostitutes, and all kinds of nonsense. You can read about it in the book of Acts as well, but this is what they came out of. But it applies to all of us to one degree or another. We're not held accountable until God reveals what is actually happening in the world to us, helps us to understand on a different level, a higher level, that, you know, this is why the world is that way. So that means that everyone living is in a vulnerable place because they're subject to a powerful force that many don't even know exists. My newfound friend at the Feast in the Poconos in 1974 was really searching for something, but she wasn't quite there yet. She didn't understand the difference between a spirit and the physicality of something. So in Paul's day, the gospel message went out to the Greek world, but they had no background, they had no foundation in law or scripture. And, you know, to understand the difficulty of the assignment that God had given to Paul to take the gospel to the Gentiles, all I have to do is go read through Acts 17, where he comes upon the Athenians, and Paul is, you know, he's looking at all of these pagan idols and these gods around, then there's one to the unknown God, and he said, okay, I've got it. I've got a hook now that I can talk to them. But they didn't understand, as you'll read through it. Now, this guy's crazy. So the course of this world is built on a foundation of disobedience to God's law. Strike number one. Strike number one. They have no knowledge of the law, and mankind has been guided and directed to disobey God from the time that Eve chose unwisely, and Adam knew that he was doing the wrong thing, but he went ahead and did it anyway. So for us, it may be done in ignorance, but it shows that without God, there's futility and alienation from God. That's this world. Even Christians, as we know, we used to lambaste, you know, years ago, oh, they're not really Christians, they're so-called Christians. Well, we don't do that anymore because we understand that if somebody is doing something right by their religion and it's in accordance with God's law, then that is to be praised. Maybe back in 1974, we hadn't come to that particular point. The course of this world, just jot this scripture down, Galatians 5:19. The course of this world is explained in verses 19 through 21. And Paul said, those who practice such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. All bad things, all works of the flesh. But in many cases, things done in ignorance by other people. In some cases, some of these things that are mentioned in Galatians 5:19 were encouraged by the pagan religions. Right? The purpose is not to go through that list. You know the works of the flesh. You know where to find it. And you know the difference between that and the fruit of God's Holy Spirit. So many of these things that are called the works of the flesh are in the mind. You know, they're kind of a thinking, mental thing, as Christ explained the difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, that even thinking a wrong thought can be sin, can make you guilty of that sin. As time goes along, you recognize that as you have the Spirit of God available to you. Thinking leads to action, and sadly, some result in following through on these impulses that are mentioned. Some of them really horrible. You know, jealousies, contentions, and outbursts, fornication, adultery, lewdness, you know, all that sort of thing is mentioned, the works of the flesh. That's not of God. A lot of the Ephesians didn't know the difference. Their religion hadn't taught them. So that is the course of the world, basically just disobedience. Or the age of this world explains the world that we were born into. So Paul helps the Ephesians, like he did for the Athenians, to understand that the works, that God winks at these times of ignorance. Well, isn't that great? Okay, what does it wink? Does God say, okay, it's okay for you to sin? No. But before he called them, they were ignorant, they're not as accountable, and then afterwards you are accountable. You get that concept, right? You get that? You understand that? That's pretty easy to understand. And like those who were called to the Church of God in Ephesus, God doesn't hold us responsible for the deception that we have been subject to, whether it was of an Ephesian sort or whatever. But we've got to leave it. And that's what the course of this world is. And understanding that is paramount now that you've come back to it. It's when you're surrounded by people at the feast, you're under kind of a protective bubble, right? Not saying bad things don't happen, but this bubble is there because it's representative of the impact of the Spirit of God freely flowing among dozens or hundreds or even thousands of people. Any of you that have ever gone to a festival site with thousands of people, you know that it's not that way now, but if you've got 14,000 people that are wandering around and you're just looking at amazement how obedient these people are, they're following directions, and you know that was a long time ago. But anyway, let's attack point number two. Point number two is understanding who the prince of the power of the air is. Who is the prince of the power of the air? I'll cite this passage, Luke 10:18. Just write it down. Read it later. Luke 10:18. Jesus told the disciples that he saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. Boom. And we trace that back to Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, to the time of the rebellion of this angelic being who had covered God's throne. He was a covering cherub. He knew the plans of God, but he rebelled. There was sin found in him. He rebelled against God. He wanted to be God. He wanted to become God, and boom, he's imprisoned on this earth. God doesn't let him out. He doesn't go out and roam the solar system. He has been confined for ages to this world. He's marooned on this world. He can't get out. He can't leave. You know, it's kind of like Hotel California. No Eagles fans here? You can check out anytime you want, but you can't ever leave. Okay, all right. Still some work to do here. Okay, a lot of people are going to say, oh, you shouldn't say that, but you know, that's probably the greatest rock band, and, you know, I think Don McLean wrote that song. It's not a good song, but at any rate, it gets the point across. He's been imprisoned on this planet. And in Revelation 12 and verse 9, it says that great dragon was cast out. I believe the time was when he rebelled, cast down to this earth. Revelation 12, 9 is talking about an event that happened ages and ages ago as we count time. Who deceives the whole world, he was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So they're confined here too. So the prince of the power of the air is here. His domain is this world. He is the god of this world, as Paul describes him. He is the god of this world, and he transmits negative thoughts, emotions, attitudes constantly all through this world. And now you coming back from the feast, it's important that you understand that. But he's confined and restricted to this earth. And as many of us have had explained to us over the years, this has resulted in the broadcast of attitudes and moods of which we can all be susceptible, to be honest. We can be. I mean, it's not good. You have to fight it off. But that deception has been in place since the Garden of Eden. My friend from Ohio didn't quite make the connection that it wasn't radio waves, it wasn't some physical thing that you could discern, but she also kind of had a point too, and I'll get to that as we go to the last point today. But Paul explains this difference, and this is a passage that you can turn to. It's a complementary passage to this because it identifies three entities that, again, it was during this time in the early 70s that this particular truth in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, beginning in verse 9, began to be accentuated to the church. It was complementary to Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2, and nobody had ever really explained it this way before. So I think it was groundbreaking at the time. But we read in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 9, "But as it is written, eye has not seen, nor ear heard." You cannot do it by the physical senses. You see, you can't see it. Just like if I can take my phone and I can press the print button and I could send a document to the printer here in the office and it would print, kind of magically. But that's not even what we're talking about here at this particular point. Eye has not seen, nor has, that's kind of a representation of the spiritual influences that are mentioned here, but, just a rough approximation. Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. It just doesn't come to him naturally without study and without reading the book, right? You've got to understand this book to understand what God has prepared for you. But God has revealed them to us through his Spirit. Ah, God's Spirit is there. For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. God's Holy Spirit helps you as a physical being to understand spiritual principles. And the law of God is one big spiritual principle. The Ten Commandments are spiritual principles. And you realize that they are spirit and they are life, because practicing them and putting them into perfection in your own life is life-giving. It is better than not obeying the law. People say, well, you can't obtain salvation by obedience to the law. Well, yeah, salvation is a gift, but you do practice the law, right? I mean, otherwise we'd have anarchy in here. People would be storming the stage. Who do you think you are? They haven't done that yet. I mean, so we'll hopefully they don't do that. But God has revealed them to us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of man which is in him? Oh, wait a minute. Way back when, in the 1970s, there's a spirit in man. What? That helps him to understand how to set up this hall and how to operate the computer and how to answer the telephone and how to build a telephone, all those things. That is the province of a spirit influence that God has placed inside the mind of a human being, which makes him different than a dog. Right now, drop the class, because I'm not going to have any more arguments in my classroom like I did, at some other time. So it was something that I'm getting a call from Mr. Dornick. I don't know if he can't. Oh boy. Why would he call me while I'm in the middle of a sermon? I'm not sure, but hi, Joe. You can't see me because obviously you're calling me for some reason, but maybe somebody wants to get in touch with Joe anyway. So things we go through. Okay. So that wasn't a biggie for me at that particular time, but the spirit in man helps us to understand what is applicable to human beings. Porpoises can't do things as smart as Flipper is. I mean, he can't save Jimmy down the well all by himself. Oh, wait a minute. He wouldn't be in a well. That's Lassie, so I can't do that. But as smart as, and animals are great and funny, and I love them to death, but they can't do what men can do. But we can do it because our brains are about the same size, shape, contained to the same material as a dolphin or a porpoise or whatever is smart. And yet we have the ability to reason, to think, and judge, and all those things that human beings can do. So that's the second spirit. There's spirit of the world, there's spirit of God, rather, the spirit of man, and then there's the spirit of the world, which is isolated in this passage. And Paul is talking about that same spiritual influence, which is broadcasting in emotions and feelings and all the negativity that has its source in the God of this world. Now, where does this spirit, which is of the world, and the source is originally with Satan, who has been cast down to earth, have his greatest effect? Where does it find a home, the spirit of this world? Because it has a home in other places that is much greater than with many other people. For the answer to that, let's go back to Ephesians 2 and verse 2. And let's read the last phrase. Now, let me also tell you that when this idea was first introduced, we applied it to everybody. This last phrase was applied to virtually everybody outside of the church. But that's not accurate. So that part of the teaching was not accurate. I mean, we just came to accept that church good, out of church not good. You know, people in Ephesus not good, the people in the church at Ephesus good. We applied that universally. Now, it was wrong, I believe, but it was a fact. And I'm going to explain that there is a difference today. So you can't apply this universally to every single human being outside of somebody that has received the Spirit of God. But this deceptive spirit, the devil, has his greatest effect, Paul said, on the individuals who are not just ignorant, like the Athenians or the Ephesians, but upon the sons of disobedience. And that is playing out right before our eyes. People who know many times right from wrong, but choose wrong over right because of some other vain philosophy that they may be subject to. Like communism. One of the tenets of communism and socialism is that the end justifies the mean. There's no Bible, there's no Ten Commandments, there's no law, there's no rules. It's only survival of the fittest. And all of these horrible ideologies we learn are descended from this Darwinian approach, this Malthusian approach that has come down to the modern educational system. They deliberately do what they know to be wrong, and that is where the greatest effect is felt and shown, and the evidence is for in the world that we live in today. And you need to understand, and I need to understand, the difference. You need to have the distinction made that not everybody else is abhorrently evil outside of the people of God. There are people who want to do good, and there are people who want to do right, and there are people who say, yeah, but they want to do good, but they have bad intentions. This was 1974, you know, attitude in the church. Yeah, they want to do good, but they're selfish. That's why they want to do good. And that never made sense to me. And now I know that it's wrong. So let's escape out of that old school mentality, okay? Let's leave that in 1975 or 74, wherever it came from. Because these are the individuals that Paul spoke of as being shipwrecked. Hymenaeus and Alexander. You can read that in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 19 through 20. I'm not going to turn there. These people knew better. They deliberately did wrong. These were apparently members of the Church of God at one time, presumably in good standing. Paul said the protection of God would be removed from them, and now they would be delivered to Satan. Not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. Now, last year, we had a situation that came up in Tucson when companies, I think maybe the hospitals were some of the first ones to mandate that people take COVID-19 vaccinations in order to keep their job. And I thought this was really interesting, and it was one of the hottest days of summer. It was August 4th last year. And I heard about this on the radio, this demonstration that would be conducted, and I heard the individual on the radio, Angela Randall, who was a nurse, who organized this, because these were people who were outraged that they were going to be forced to take a shot in order to keep their job. And then I was totally stupefied that I ran into colleagues of mine, the former pharmaceutical industry, who said, yeah, we had to take a shot. Yeah, no big deal. It's just everybody, you know, if you don't do it, you don't deserve to have a job. That's the way they thought. A couple of them, maybe not everybody. Well, what's the big deal? Well, a lot of people had information. They researched information. They didn't think this was safe. And it turns out that they were right. You know, these people were right. You may not have seen the interview that I did with Angela, but I do know that the people have said that I speak too fast. As I was interviewing her, then I realized that, yeah, they're kind of right. You know, I do speak kind of fast. And You got to really keep up with me. I need to slow myself down. But I'd interviewed her for an article that I wanted to write on the vaccine mandates, and I did. If you didn't get to see it, then you're going to see it now. And it's taken on an iPhone, so pardon the fact that it's a very narrow screen, but if we can play that at this time. It's coming. I think.
Okay, I'm here with Angela, World News and Prophecy Review, is down at Banner Hospital. And
yeah, if we have to start it over again, then we can, we'll get it. We'll get it. You know, we're not going anywhere. Those of you sitting on the living room couch, you're fine. Just relax. Have another cup of coffee. Take a sip. If we can't get the video, then we can play the audio, but yeah, we'll get it. We're going to get it. Here we go. Yay. Oh, wait a minute. Let me set this up just before you hit the press button. Let me set this up just a little bit more because I'm reminding you this is one of the hottest days of the year. We're out in front of Banner Hospital on Campbell, not too far away from here. It is at least 110 degrees. And on the street, on both sides of Campbell, were people with signs and protesting and, and cars are honking at them in support, and you're going to see that here as well. But these were hundreds of employees who were protesting this vaccine mandate that they had to take or else they would lose their jobs. And they were brave because, they stood out there. And Angela is the one that led the protest. And, mind you that it's 110 degrees, so she's dressed in a T-shirt and shorts, and you don't see me, but, there she is braving the heat with hundreds and hundreds of other people. Maybe been 500 people there, to be honest with you. But anyway, it was quite a crowd. It was very inspiring. Okay, thanks, Joe.
Okay, I'm here with Angela, World News and Prophecy Review, is down at Banner Hospital in Tucson, Arizona, and I'm with one of the organizers of the event that is protesting Banner's mandate that all employees now be required to take the COVID-19 vaccine, so-called vaccines. And so, Angela, what is it specifically that you're trying to accomplish with this particular protest? Are you raising awareness, or just what do you think?
So this group, we are called Tucson Caregivers for Liberty. We started with just a few healthcare workers and have grown to so much more in a week, as you can see. Our goal.
We got a lot of support from the road here.
Our goal is really to raise awareness that people are not alone, that don't want this vaccine, that we have freedom of choice, that we shouldn't be forced to take something in our body that we're not comfortable with. They say that we have a choice, but they're making us choose between our livelihood and taking the vaccine. And now it's Banner, VA, and TMC, the military, as well as Border Patrol. And they're coming for our kids next. They're coming for schools next, and it will only grow. So we're just here to make a stand, show people there's power in numbers. You don't have to back down. Banner only has 50% of their employees vaccinated, and TMC has 68% that are not vaccinated.
What kind of feedback are you getting from other employees at Banner? Are they shy? Are they reticent? Are they afraid that they might lose their jobs?
They are afraid of retaliation, I will say that, but they are ready to be fired and die on this hill if they have to. We have worked so hard taking care of patients and doing everything we're told. We worked through the pandemic many times without the proper PPE, with reusing masks, and now to be forced to take a vaccination that we're not comfortable with is just blindsiding a lot of people, and they feel hurt, they feel disappointed. There's a lot of discrimination going on, especially at Banner. The vaccinated are being given badges that say safe and verified. The unvaccinated are being segregated. They're not allowed to eat with other coworkers. They're not allowed to attend meetings without masks. They're being just isolated. They're being called out. So even if they do stay, if they allow them to get a religious exemption, which is a whole other story, just the environment there is just awful right now.
So let me ask you this question. Have you seen any evidence in your current practice? I understand you used to work for Banner before, right?
I did. I was seven years as an ER nurse.
So your husband is also a nurse.
Yep, ER nurse.
Have you now in the ER? Maybe you might not see this, but have you seen any evidence that previously vaccinated patients are somehow getting COVID themselves, even though they've been vaccinated to prevent that.
Those are coming through. We're also seeing I'm hearing numerous stories from other healthcare workers of just bizarre side effects. And they're not relating it to the vaccine. And we don't know that it's a vaccine. But that's the point. We don't know. And there's not informed consent. And not only that, providers are being censored to what they can say to the patient. I can't give details, but just know when you go to your doctor at Banner, the doctor can't even be honest with you and relay any possible effects to you, and that's a problem.
That is outstanding. Angela, I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good work. Keep up the good work, and may God bless you.
Thank you.
Okay, so there we go. So, did you pay attention to what she said? This was over a year ago. She said, they're coming for your kids. And indeed, they have come for the kids. Now, previously, the companies responsible for these vaccines had delivered them for the use of all the way down to the age of five. And you know, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, you can look for it in the literature yourself, but there has been an astronomical rise in the deaths of young children down to the age of five. This is criminal behavior. Myocarditis, which never happens in young people, has gone up astoundingly. The diagnosis of myocarditis is a death sentence within 5 years. Average lifespan after a diagnosis of myocarditis is 5 years. Many, many little children have died after taking two shots or one shot of a vaccine. I worked in the pharmaceutical business for 20 years. I can tell what criminal behavior is. These were rushed into existence on emergency use, but now the CDC has determined that it will be mandated for public school children to have these toxic vaccines before they can attend school. That's something that you've read about and heard about in the news, and a lot of people are very, very upset with that. They're coming after your kids, and they have come after kids. We've got what is called SADS. You ever heard of SADS? You never heard of it before the last couple of years. Sudden adult death syndrome. Why are so many young people between the ages of 19 and 64, work age people, dying? For no apparent reason, apparently. This is something that is easily researched by anybody. All you have to do is go to some of the insurance councils and see the astounding number of working people deaths. And they have to keep track of that because they're actuarials, right? They have to keep track of all of that because they are working people, and many of them, like I did, if I died on the job, then, you know, my estate would be paid 2.5 times of my salary. And with insurance companies having to pay this out, I mean, this is ringing bells. This has been happening. It's very, very alarming. Why is this happening in this day and age? It is because of the God of this world. Now, children are also the target of greater and greater attacks, which I'll get to in just a minute. We have seen an alarming arise, and one of the things that COVID-19 has at least brought in a positive way is brought out in the open what is being taught in our schools. They're coming after our kids with gender transition. They're coming after our kids by telling them, hey, wouldn't you really rather be a girl rather than a boy, or a boy rather? They're taking boys and trying to make them into girls, and girls and trying to make them into boys. This is so horrible and so sick that they even have armed Antifa guards guarding these drag queen presentations to little kids, and you see inside, you see mothers and parents and grandmothers cackling with delight as this lewd display of indecency is foisted on children, further confusing them. It's just unbelievable. You know, guns are not good from the liberal point of view unless Antifa is guarding a drag queen story time telling situation in a public library in a school. It's the most incredible thing, and this stuff hasn't been over. It hasn't been going on all of our lives. It's just something that has popped onto the radar screen just recently. So they're coming after your kids, and as they have continually lowered the age for the COVID-19 vaccines to include children, there has been a dramatic, astronomical increase in heart attacks for teens and young children. And you don't need me to just say this, because I'm saying all you have to do is read the books, okay? This is written by the greatest vaccine exposer of all time, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And he wrote a book. I can't mention these names really publicly, but he can, because he wrote a book about the real Anthony Fauci and all of his colleagues and all of his buddies that had the information about these vaccines long before they were even made, and, you know, was ahead of the NIH, because they are the ones that came up and dreamt up these weird bat viruses and actually began experimenting with coronaviruses in the United States, did it at North Carolina, highly documented. It was transferred over to Wuhan, China. And now there are still some people who believe that Corona-19 came from bat soup. Seriously, some people still believe that. Orchestrated. Good people have gone to jail in the last couple of years because a few of them gathered inside the Capitol, maybe sat in Mike Pence's chair, somebody was sentenced to prison now for 4 years. They sat in Mike Pence's chair. A few people came into the Capitol. There was thousands and thousands and thousands of people outside, but very few of them went inside, and a lot of those were arrested, and they're still in jail without any appeal for bail or anything else. This is criminal behavior, but it's done by the authorities. It's done by the people in charge, and so might makes right. Simone Gold was one of the leading advocates against vaccines, a lawyer and a doctor. They put her in prison for 90 days. She was finally got out because she walked into the Capitol, was in the rotunda, didn't do anything except read a statement, and then later on, you know, they got a video of her and they put her in jail. Really sweet, sweet lady, very, very smart. And she didn't do anything, didn't bust anything, just read a statement. They put her in jail. And the only congressman that showed up as she came out of jail was Louis Gohmert, the congressman from East Texas. And when that happened, I called his office and I said, you know, the lady answered the phone. They've been getting a lot of phone calls, believe me. She said, what do you want? I said, I just want you to relay my thanks to Congressman Gohmert for doing what he did and showed up when she needed it. The CEO of Pfizer, Anthony Berla, made a statement about a year ago, said anybody that speaks out against the vaccines is a terrorist and should be arrested. He's serious about this. And a lot of people, the talking heads on TV, echoed his sentiments. They knew. And it's not like I'm telling this story, you know, without any documentation or proof. They knew before it ever happened that it was wrong. They knew it was going to kill people. They knew it was going to maim people, cause vaccine injury. But they wanted to hide the data for 75 years. But a federal judge said, you've got to start releasing the documents. People were horrified when they began. I mean, now a lot of this is kind of long and it's boring, thousands upon thousands of pages. People don't want to wade through that. Just read the synopsis of this stuff. This is the God of this world working very, very actively among the sons of disobedience. What is in those trials of 20,000 subjects, at least in the Pfizer trial, is horrific. But they got emergency use, and now the CDC has added it to mandated vaccines. Why do they do it? Knowing the results. A lot of you are sitting there, and I know right now, watching on your TV or your computer screen, you're saying, oh, come on, tell us what the motivation is. Well, it's depopulation. A lot of them are depopulation experts. A lot of them have believed into this Darwinian philosophy that we got too many people living, and we need to reduce the world's population. That's what it comes down to, plain and simple. Really. That's the modus operandi. And also, money. Notice, pardon me. Jude 10 says, and this is the principle here, but these speak evil of whatever they do not know and whatever they know naturally like brute beasts. In these things they corrupt themselves. Woe to them, for they have gone in the way of Cain, having run greedily in the arrow of Balaam for profit. Perfectly describes the unrighteous and ungodly acts. The Pfizer's biggest selling drug for many, many years was Lipitor, a statin, anti-cholesterol drug, proven to be, actually, statins are not so good for you anymore, but that's beside the case. They made about $130, $140 billion over the course of its patent life. They made over $100 billion just on these vaccines in 1 year, one company. So this is part of the reason for it. The amount of money that has been made by so many people during the last 2 years with patents that they own and are privy to, knowing all along that these things were very, very dangerous to people, is absolutely staggering. Now here is, we're ready to finish up here, but I want you to hang with me just a little bit. And I know that, you know, I didn't start my watch here, but 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 13 is an often overlooked principle of prophecy that Paul told Timothy about. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 13, but evil men and imposters, or seducers as some translations bring out, will grow worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. They deceive themselves and they deceive others because they're agents of the god of this world. They really are agents, because that is where the work of Satan finds a readily acceptable home, in the sons of disobedience. That is where you must fear, not fear man or fear anybody. But in the past, you see, we categorized everybody in Ephesians 2 and verse 2 that wasn't in the church of God as being in that category. But not everybody is in that category, because not everybody is a son of disobedience. There are plenty of people in this world that believe in God. They have not yet been called. But there will be an innumerable multitude of them that come out of the great tribulation, right? Those are people that are not privy, not susceptible to this heinous influence that the god of this world is putting on people. What we thought in the past was somewhat short-sighted. But the people that have wrought the havoc that we have had in the last 2 to 2.5 years are the sons and the daughters of disobedience to God. But there are many people who oppose what is very illogical that is happening and taking place. But you'd have to be a naive person to suspect that all of this has been going on all along and happening all the time. It just hasn't been. Now, possibly good news. And I know that I'll take flack for this, so I'm going to try to explain it. A short-term solution, and short-term, believe me, is the only way this could happen, because of our viewpoint in terms of the world that we live in, that everything outside of these walls is bad, and that's a slight exaggeration. There may be a short-term political relief that is granted, because all across the country there's been a hue and a cry and an anger against what has been happening in the world, whether it's to do with children, whether it's to do with drugs, or whether it's to do with the dishonesty of going to war and the ongoing issues of leading families in this nation who are ungodly sons of disobedience. There's no other way of putting it. People are going to say, well, that's bias, that's political and everything. I don't care what people say. There are good people and there are bad people in this world. There are good people that are running for noble intentions for office, and they want to reverse all of this nonsense. You can't throw them in a big bag and say they're all the sons of disobedience, because they are not. I look at the lady in Arizona that we have. She is incredible, Carrie Lake, who is running for governor. Am I saying, oh, this is the greatest thing, you know, this is the second coming? No. I'm just saying, this is a person that sees the media for what they are and understands what needs to be done in our nation, not just our state. Many, many other candidates. If the polls were correct, and if they didn't cheat this time, there would be an incredible red wave of dominance that will take place. but you can't trust the systems that these people, the sons of disobedience, have become masters at. So I don't know, and you don't know what's going to happen, but there is an incredible uproar, if you've been paying attention, to people that are outraged by what has happened in the world in the last few years. But there is a God of this world, and he is active, but you can stop him. You can stop him in your life. You can stop him. James 4 and verse 7 says, therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 5 says, submit to God, resist the devil. We are to resist. We are to resist the negative impulses and emotions and attitudes of depravity that are there. And we must, as a people of God, stand up for what is right. But you will notice this, that the people who have stood up for what is right have a big, solid bullseye on their back, and a lot of them have been attacked unmercifully. And the reason for that? The God of this world. The God of this world opposes everything that is righteous, that has any hint of righteousness, and that should give us a clue as to what will happen, and it's exposed in Revelation 12, that when the church preaches the powerful gospel of message, that is going to be opposed like nothing we have ever seen. And the elements of media and government will be used just as they have now. That is what is meant by the water, the flood that goes after these individuals. That's what's going to happen. Buckle your seatbelts, folks. We are called to understand what is happening in the world and why. I wanted to give you what I thought would be the most important message possible after your celebration last week of looking forward to the age of peace and Jesus' reign. We're not there yet, but we will be soon. In the meantime, it's important for all of us to understand the world around us and to resist the God of this world.